I know you're out there. I know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. A world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries. A world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice I leave to you.
The Chris Ann Hall Show.
Any varmint that crosses that lady's path has met its match. Come on!
Rise and shine, liberty-loving patriots. Welcome to the Chris Ann Hall Show. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever you may be listening. We are pleased to bring you truth this morning. Always liberty over security, principle over party, truth over your favorite personality or politician, which happens to get me into a bit of trouble sometimes when I point out that it's your favorite guy or gal that is destroying the Constitution. Whether it be through ignorance or malice, what does it matter, actually? Because you see, at the end of the day, the destruction is still the same. You know, I want to try something different today from now on, okay? I'm going to try to remind you. You know I'm not very good about this sort of thing, reminding you of these things, but I want to try something for Twitter and see how this works. How many of you have Twitter accounts? I have a Twitter account. It's simply at Chris Ann Hall. And what I would like for those of my regular podcast listeners and those of you, my first time, my one time listeners, if you have a Twitter account, I want you to tweet, please tweet to at Chris Ann Hall, what I learned on the Chris Ann Hall Show today. And just one thing, you know, Twitter's 140 characters or less, and then just tag me at Chris Ann Hall, or use a hashtag, hashtag what I learned on the Chris Ann Hall Show today. I know that's a lot of letters, but we'll see how it works. Because I want to see what's going on in Twitter. I think that Twitter is a very good tool, and I think we should be using it more often. Some of the greatest leaks and news comes out first through Twitter. It's just another method of social media that we can use in our battle to preserve liberty. And this is very important. We have an audience out there that needs the truth, and they need to know where to find the truth. Because if we don't get our heads out of our rear ends really, really soon, we're going to be down a road that we can't turn back from. And I know there are some that already believe there's no turning back. I happen to disagree at this point. We still have the remedy of the states, and we still have the remedy of the sheriffs. We still have the remedy of our local governments. But if we don't stop focusing our efforts and our attentions on Washington, D.C., and start educating people about the real power that we have, man, I'll tell you what, Galt may be the only real option here. I'm not kidding. We are coming to, I feel, a crescendo coming. I feel this happening. And I feel the history is repeating at a quickened pace, so much so that the things that our framers are warning and the things that I have repeated in our framers' warnings are happening very, very quickly. We must not forget that lamp of history that provides us with truth. And we have to stop looking to Washington, D.C. to fix itself. There's an article that came out on The Hill that says, a GOP senator on Thursday said the House should pass a bill funding the Department of Homeland Security that has a better chance of passing in the Senate. Senator Jim Rich, a Republican in Idaho, says, we are unable to get on this bill to amend it. And as a result of that, the House is going to have to send us another bill that we can get on. Are you hearing that? The Senate has a majority. The Republicans have a majority in the Senate. And they're saying because the Democrats don't want to vote on this, that the Senate can do nothing. He says Democrats are locked up against it, adding, there's nothing we can do. And he says now it's the responsibility of the GOP leadership in the House to send over a different bill. He says, quote, the House is going to have to. We can't start a bill here ourselves. Now, here's the interesting thing. Because, you see, what Rich is saying is that the Democrats are rulers and the Republicans are cowards. That's exactly what he's saying. We have to bend down to the rulers of the Democratic Party because, you know, even though they're in the minority, they're ruling over us because we are cowards. Now, it's interesting to point out once again that the House of Representatives does not need the Senate to pass a budget. No, they don't. And as a matter of fact, according to Article 1, Section 7 of the Constitution, the president can't even veto this. Now, I know that the Supreme Court is going to differ in that opinion, and I think that those in government are going to differ in that opinion. But whose opinion is more valuable on the function of the Constitution, the Supreme Court or the father of the Constitution, the man who actually wrote it? James Madison tells us in Federalist 58, the House of Representatives can not only refuse, but they alone can propose. They alone can propose the supplies requisite for the support of the government. They, in a word, hold the purse, that powerful instrument by which we behold in the history of British Constitution an infant and humble representation of the people, gradually enlarging the sphere of its activity and importance, and finally reducing, as far as it seems to have wished, all the overgrown prerogatives of other branches of government. It is the House that can expand or reduce the government. He says, this power of the purse may in fact be regarded as the most complete and effectual weapon with which any constitution can arm the immediate representatives of the people for obtaining redress of every grievance and for carrying into effect every just and salutary measure. You see, it is the House that does the funding. And Article 1, Section 7 makes that clear. The House is in charge of this. But when you have people in government who are completely ignorant of this, I read one article where in a conservative blogosphere where they quoted Federalist 58 and then failed to quote the part where the House alone can do this, arguing that the grievances can be redressed through the funding or the defunding, according to Federalist 58, but refusing to recognize that the House alone has that power. I don't know, reading is fundamental. We need to go watch some LeVar Burton, I suppose, and Reading Rainbow, and understand that reading is fundamental, and you can't pick and choose which parts of the context you want to apply, because one part is scarier than the other. It should be liberating to us that the House of Representatives can fund and defund. Madison made that clear in the House of Representatives when he was representing the state of, the people of Virginia. Said, look, there's a reason we put this power in the hands of the House alone. Because the House is the direct representatives of the people, and they are best suited to wield this sword. You have to read Federalist 58. It's very interesting. The whole argument there in the middle of the text about the House of Representatives being the holders of the power of the purse, all has to do with those who represent the people also wishing to represent the dignity of their country in the eyes of other nations, he says. that the House will be particularly sensible to every prospect of public danger or of dishonorable stagnation in public affairs. Interesting, isn't it? The very thing the House was supposed to be sensible to is the very thing that they've become. They have become the public danger. They have become the dishonorable stagnation of public affairs. Why? Because we continue to elect ignorant people to protect our liberty. We continue to elect dishonorable people to defend our liberty. I am sorry, I can't help it, but call out the truth. Anybody who would vote for any of the budgets over the last 6 years is dishonorable, is a liar, is leading our children into slavery. Debt is slavery, leading our children into slavery at the expense of the ignorance of the people. And those who are in government who refuse to learn the truth, who refuse to know the truth, are going to identify themselves as part of this wicked, dishonorable system. How many representatives of the people in the House of Representatives want to know that they have the power and they have the power alone? How many of them know that but are afraid to wield it because of political ramifications? We saw 25 in the House that would stand up against Boehner, and the rest cowered in the character that they are. Cowered because they didn't want their political power to be diminished. When are we going to elect people that say, you know what, the liberty that belongs to my child is more important than my own political career? Louis Gohmert said it. What about the rest of them? I'm just curious. When are we going to stop looking to Washington, D.C. and start looking for the real solutions? D.C. is lost.
Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
So Washington, D.C. is lost. You need to mark them off. I'm telling you, it is done. It is a done deal. They are a waste of our time. They are a waste of our energy. They will not fix themselves, and they refuse to be fixed. They refuse to fix. They refuse to get the fixes. They refuse to understand the fixes. They refuse to apply the checks and balances that have been placed in their hands, and they refuse, absolutely refused, to be corrected by the people who have put them in office. I mean, turn your backs on them. They are done. They are a waste of our time. Washington, D.C. is lost. Let's mark the time and the date. The body is cold. They are no longer breathing in Washington, D.C. It is time to look for the real solutions. The real solutions exist in the states through the 9th and 10th Amendments. The real solutions exist in the sovereignty of the states and of the local governments. And right now, we have a battle on our hands. Right now, we have a sheriff standing up for you and me against the tyranny of the IRS. How do we have a sheriff that's able to do that? How do we have a sheriff that's willing to do that? Well, because we have a sheriff in Eddy County, New Mexico, who is of character, of great character. who instinctively knew there was something wrong with what was going on, and then reached out for the knowledge and the clarification to understand whether that instinct was correct. But what is the real solution here? We do not understand that one of the most critically important areas in our sovereign duty to protect America's liberty is in the constitutional sheriff. Today, Washington, D.C. is the absolute example of tyranny. The ever-expanding federal government, the erosion of our liberties protections, citizens threatened in their own homes and their own neighborhoods by the very government that was supposed to be established and elected to protect their property. Madison, this seems to be a Madison Day. Madison wrote a paper called Property in 1792, where he professed that the only purpose for government was to protect our life, our liberty, and our property. Samuel Adams wrote in 1772 in an essay, The Rights of Men, that every law must conform to the rights of men, primarily being first liberty, or first life, secondly liberty, third property, together with the right to protect and defend them. He said that all laws must conform to this, otherwise they are tyranny. We have the massive militarization of our local law enforcement, a continual disregard for individual rights that all too often we have seen bring unfortunate and unnecessary fatal results. It is more important now than ever that we stop looking to Washington, D.C. to fix our problems and start looking locally. It is more important than ever to have constitutionally minded sheriffs, deputies, and officers patrolling our streets. Did you know that a constitutional sheriff can and has the power to intercede when federal forces burst through their constitutional barriers? Did you know a constitutional sheriff can ensure that his officers have an informed and healthy regard for the principles that they took an oath to uphold and defend? Do you know that your officers, sheriffs, deputies, and peace officers all take an oath to support the Constitution of the United States? To support the constitutions of their states? Do you know the majority of our states' constitutions actually mirror that of our Constitution of the United States and the Bill of Rights? Do you know that I actually said that wrong? Because the truth of the matter is, it is the Constitution that mirrors the majority of our state constitutions, not the other way around, because our state constitutions existed prior to the Constitution of the United States, and our states created the Constitution of the United States to limit government because they knew best. They'd already been doing it. Start looking local.
It never really mattered how hard it would be, because she filled me with love and the strength to live. She said,
the Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
So the question should be now, Chris Ann, how exactly does this work? How does the sheriff stand up against the federal government? How is that possible? We've been taught for decades that the federal government is supreme. After all, isn't that what the Supremacy Clause says, that the federal government is supreme over the states? Well, first off, no, that's not what the Supremacy Clause says. The Supremacy Clause says, and we'll go through this slowly grammatically, okay, so we can see this. The Supremacy Clause says the Constitution of the United States, comma, end clause, independent, clause, the Constitution of the United States, comma, and the laws of the United States which are made in pursuance thereof, end that clause. It is only the Constitution of the United States that is the supreme law of the land unconditionally. The laws made by Congress, anything that the three branches of government do, are only the supreme law of the land when they are made in pursuance to the Constitution. So if the federal government is doing something beyond the reach of the Constitution, it is not the supreme law of the land. James Madison tells us in Federalist 45, the powers delegated to the federal government are few and defined. Those that remain in the states are numerous and definite. He says the powers delegated to the federal government are reserved to external objects. That's Founders Speak for Foreign Affairs. And then he names them war, peace, negotiation, and foreign commerce. He says everything else to the prosperity and the security and the happiness of the people in the state are reserved to the states alone. And so then, if any branch of the federal government creates any kind of rule or regulation or law that expands beyond war, peace, negotiation, and foreign commerce, then guess what? It is not the supreme law of the land. Now, Madison tells us that besides the security of the document itself, besides the security of the courts limiting the central government, we have a greater security, he says. The legislators of the states will be the guardians, he said, the sure guardians of the people's liberty. You see, it's the states who created the federal government. The federal government is a creation of the states. And we will never get that creature back on its leash until we understand who is its master. The master of the creature is the states. And we have to understand that the states are supposed to be keeping the federal government in its box when it refuses to remain itself. What beast would choose to be locked in a box? Not a single one. Any beast who has the keys to his own cage is going to get out. And through our ignorance, we have handed the federal government its own keys, and now it rules and reigns with unlimited power. Why? Because the master of the beast won't keep the cage locked. But you see, we've got to understand the power that our local governments have. Madison explains in Federalist Papers 51. He says, hence, a double security arises to the rights of the people. The different government will control each other, and at the same time, each will be controlled by itself. Madison is telling us that there exists a sphere of federal power and a sphere of local power that is an essential check and balance on power itself. He says the local or municipal authorities form distinct and independent portions of supremacy, no more subject within their respective authorities than the general authority is subject to them within its own sphere. Madison is saying that, yes, the federal government has authority, but only exists within the sphere of that delegated power. What is the sphere of delegated power? He tells us in 45, external affairs, war, peace, negotiation, foreign commerce. That is the only sphere of federal authority. When they operate lawfully, they have supremacy. That's what the Supremacy Clause says. When the laws of the United States are made in pursuance to the Constitution, they have supremacy. But the same supremacy exists in the local governments where they act within their delegated power. Local or municipal authorities form distinct and independent portions of the supremacy. No more subject within their respective authorities than the general authority is subject to them within its own sphere. The same supremacy that exists in the federal government exists in the local governments in their sphere of authority and delegated power. And it just so happens that the powers delegated to the federal government are few and enumerated, and the powers that remain locally are numerous and indefinite. And when the federal government steps outside their sphere, their power is lost. It is an unlawful exertion of power. An unlawful exertion of power carries no power at all. If you steal someone's car, you have no lawful authority over that vehicle. You are exerting an unlawful authority and you have no power. Done. Power's gone. Why? Because you stole it. And if the feds are stealing power from the states, it is of power of no force. It is a stolen power. It is no authority whatsoever. And then the sphere of the local takes over because they hold that power. They own the ownership of that power. And it is their duty to exert the power. Now, the interesting thing is that the Supreme Court actually agrees with me on this. Agrees with me. Ha ha. Not me. James Madison. You see, in a case, Mack Prinz v. United States, or Prinz Mack v. U.S., I think is the correct way they say that, the Supreme Court affirmed the sovereignty of the American sheriff, quoting that part of Federalist 51 that I just gave you from James Madison, that the local or municipal authorities form a distinct and independent portions of the supremacy, no more subjects within their respective authorities than the general authority is subject to them within their own sphere. The Supreme Court said that the federal government cannot rule over the sheriffs when they are outside of their sphere. The ruling in the justices declared that the portions of the Brady Bill were unconstitutional and that the federal government could not commandeer state or county officers to do its bidding. Quoting James Madison. This case was not a win just for our sheriffs, but this was a reassertion of the supremacy of the 9th and 10th Amendments and its principles. We have to understand just how powerful our sheriffs are. Our sheriffs have the power to stand up to the federal government when they step outside their sphere. Not only do they have the power, they have the duty to do that. You know, your sheriff is not a hireling of anyone. The sheriff is selected by the people, is charged with protecting and defending the liberty of the people. That's part of their oath to the Constitution. But you see, because the people don't remember the power of the sheriff, don't understand the authority of the sheriff, they don't know about Prinz Mack v. U.S., which the Supreme Court said correctly, according to James Madison, that the sheriff is not a subject to the federal government when it's out of its sphere. The sheriff is supreme in your county, in his sphere. Your sheriff is the most powerful person. He can be your best friend or the worst enemy to liberty. Let me ask you some questions. Who is more powerful in your county, the sheriff or the county commissioner? Remember, the sheriff is not hired by, or is he required to take orders from your local government. Who is more powerful in your county, the sheriff or your state legislator? Remember, the sheriff is not hired by, does not take orders from the state. If the state legislator breaks the law in the sheriff's jurisdiction, he goes to jail just like everyone else. Who is more powerful in your county, your sheriff or your federal senator? If the state doesn't issue orders for your sheriff, the feds certainly do not. Remember that whole sphere thing? The states are sovereign apart from the federal government. Who is more powerful in your county, the sheriff or the president of the United States? Do you know that the president can issue no executive order that constitutionally or legally binds your sheriff? But if the president comes to your county and commits a crime, your sheriff can arrest him, and he doesn't have to ask anyone's permission to do it, because that's his sphere. And that's what you have selected and elected and hired him to do. Our framers knew that an essential check and balance on the government power existed in limiting the sphere of federal power. And we must recognize that our sheriffs are the local protectors of the people's rights, and in his sphere, he or she is superior to all persons acting contrary to the rights of the people, and that includes the government itself. We have sheriffs who are willing to take that stand today. There is a number of them. You know them. Sheriff David Clark, Sheriff Richard Mack, Sheriff Nicholas Finch, Sheriff Brad Rogers, and now Sheriff Scott London in Eddy County, New Mexico. Do you have a sheriff that's committed to constitutional government and liberty? Do you have a sheriff that would protect your family from federal SWAT teams that have so little regard for human freedom and human life that they would put your family at risk over something like raw milk and student loans? Do you have a sheriff who would stand against the IRS when they're trying to steal your property outside of due process? Do you have a sheriff that would protect your personal property if the Bureau of Land Management came to steal it? This is the power of your sheriff. Is that who your sheriff is? Why not? You elected
Chris
him.
Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist. Chris Ann Hall Show. She's Liberty's lobbyist.
You know, all these examples I told you about sheriffs in the federal government are true. Sheriff Brad Rogers of Elkhart County, Indiana, stood against the FDA when it was trying to terrorize an Amish family over raw milk. Did you know that in 2007, the FDA took their SWAT teams and raided an Amish milk farmer in Indiana in the dead of night? Raw milk farmer David Hochstetler was raided and harassed continually throughout 2010 and 2011. Finally, Sheriff Rogers had enough. After several confrontations, he sent a letter to the FDA informing them that if they stepped foot in his county again, they would be arrested. Wow. Is that possible? Can a sheriff do that? Yes. A sheriff can arrest federal agents. But you know what? We have too many sheriffs that believe that they have to enforce the law and not protect liberty. What if snipers show up, federal snipers show up because your livestock is trespassing or you've been deemed a threat to turtles? Ask Clive and Bundy how that worked out, right? What if a DOE, Department of Education, SWAT team kicks down your door for unpaid tuition bills? That happened to a family in California. Is your sheriff an enforcer of the law or a protector of the Constitution's state and federal and your liberty? Would your sheriff sit down with Rosa Parks or drag her off the bus? Would your sheriff say, "I'm sorry, ma'am, I don't make the laws, I just enforce them"? You see, there is a way to know for sure if your sheriff is a constitutionally minded sheriff or not. Go sit down with him and talk to him and ask him some very, very important questions. Ask him, will you require all federal agents to inform and form you and obtain your permission before serving warrants on your citizens? Will you verify all warrants served by the federal agents are in compliance with the 4th, 5th, and 6th Amendments? That might be a little difficult because that might actually mean your sheriff has to know those things. Will you ensure that all federal warrants are issued by a court of common law and not an administrative law court? And all warrants are complete with the following elements. A warrant is based upon probable cause. An oath or affirmation by a common law court of local jurisdiction. A warrant has specifically listed the places to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. There are no exceptions, no other exceptions to your right to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures. The Fourth Amendment makes no mention of national security, exigent circumstances, or officer safety. These are all exceptions to your rights created by the government to expand their power. Better yet, why don't you go to CSPOA.org and print out a copy of the resolution that they have and sit down with your sheriff and walk through the resolution. There is absolutely nothing on that resolution that your sheriff should be intimidated by or afraid to promise to do. Everything on that CSPOA.org resolution is completely in compliant with the oath that they took of office. Make sure your sheriff has a copy of Richard Mack's books, The Constitutional Sheriff and America's Best Hope. If you want to know more about the power of your sheriff and the lesson that I taught you today, it's available in my book, Sovereign Duty. It is starts on page 73. It is chapter 5 of part 1. Why don't you take this book, Sovereign Duty, and give it to your sheriff, and then sit down with him and go over it? At least chapter 5, The Power and the Duty of the Sheriff. It's about time we take back control of our local government, because Washington, D.C. is a cold case. It's totally dead. They will not fix themselves, and they will not be fixed by us. Your power exists in the local government, and if you want a constitutional sheriff, you can have it. All you have to do is work at it. It is the most important thing you might do for your child. God bless. So we came to light.